Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the podcast number 3 for the ALCP, the All Caps podcast. I'm joined by Stephen Wilkinson, the president of the ALCP. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning, Vinny.
Now, on the agenda to today is about driving impairment on the influence of cannabis. And we have a couple recent articles that I will pull up here just for people to get the grasp of the situation. This out of Reuters.com. After states legalized medical marijuana, traffic deaths fell. This one out of Health and Fitness, USHealthMags.com. First of its kind study finds virtually no driving impairment under the influence of marijuana.
So, so sorry, Benny, I'm just going to jump into that one there. How short reporters' memories are. First ever study? We can go back to, I think, 1982. I think the American government's own transport department did a study on the road and on simulation cars, on virtual reality sort of cars. And they concluded that driving under the influence of cannabis was similar to driving moderately tired. And that was back in 1982. So yeah, we'll just get that one. It wasn't the first ever study. I think there's a lot of studies in history that have said there's no real danger with driving under the influence of cannabis. Yes, if you've never smoked cannabis before and you get behind the wheel, yes, you can be very impaired and you will definitely be a danger, but the odds are you'll be that stoned that you won't even know how to start the car. So you should be okay.
That's right. And until, of course, they pass a law requiring tired drivers to sleep on the side of the road if they get pulled up by a cop, and if they don't do it,
or lose their license for 6 months. If you're too tired and you get pulled over by the cop, you lose your license for 6 months.
Yeah, and the cop tells you to go to sleep, and if you don't want to, he books you for resisting arrest.
Yeah.
Now, the element of this driving impairment thing, of course, 1982, you said, was the first study on this.
There's one I found, yes.
Which brings up an interesting point in almost any debate relative to the public perception of cannabis versus the reality, is that, oh, we don't know enough. Yes, we do, and we have for a very long time. Oh, yep. It might be dangerous. No, it's not, and we know that, and we've known that for a very long time. Oh, there are risks associated. No, there aren't, and we know that, and we've known it for a very long time. There's only lies, essentially. The only time that anybody would even want to restrict the freely available cannabis plant is based on lies.
Yep. Yeah, I think the factor that people miss out on is you are in no real danger to yourself or anybody else if you're driving while you have cannabis, if it's something that you do on a daily basis, regular basis, that you're a regular cannabis user. The factor that is the problem is when alcohol is introduced. Cannabis is fine on its own, but you should never mix it with alcohol. If you're using alcohol, that's going to make you impaired. What happens is with cannabis, your reactions slow down. Under alcohol, with alcohol on top of that, you have this no reaction at all. So it's alcohol that is the problem. People forget that. We had a case here in Nelson back in the early 2000s where a young man crashed his car. He died. It was a sad moment. The coroner looked at this case, and he came and he looked at all the facts, and he came up and he said in the paper that the reason why this young gentleman crashed was because he was under the influence of cannabis. And this is the reason why cannabis should never, ever be made legal. I looked into the facts. What we had was a young man who was three times over his the legal limit of alcohol. He was at a party. Just before he was leaving, he was handed – well, during the party, he was handed a smoke. He had a couple of puffs of a smoke. He got in his car three times over the limit. He had no seatbelt on, and he crashed his car and died. And we have a coroner saying in a national newspaper, this is the reason why cannabis should be never made legal.
Now, we talk about the buy-off of scientific opinion a lot on my own show, because when you see these kind of broad-brush statements being made, suspicion often comes up. Is this person on the take, or are they really that foolish as to think that this would be a good idea?
I wouldn't even want to go down that path, Vinny. I mean, that's getting a bit too dark. Who knows what motivates that person? Or yeah, it could be like Bill Rowling, could be like Jim Anderton. Jim Anderton was so against cannabis because why? His daughter committed suicide and there was cannabis in her system. So he blamed cannabis, and that became his only motivation to keep cannabis illegal. Even though if you like talk to people who know him, they'll say that the reason why that she was having a lot of trouble was because he was a very strong, domineering father.
Mm. Now, indeed, I believe a number of years ago I had a conversation with Chris Fowley, the head of Normal, about that particular case, and I believe it was due to this two elements. Number one is this thing called prohibition rage, whereby you will be domineered and you will be mistreated by, in some cases, your own family, and that will cause you to have social dysphoria and a number of other problems with your behavior, and that can sometimes even lead to suicide. But it's not a cannabis isolated phenomenon. This happens whenever children are being persecuted by their parents for something they don't perceive as doing any wrong. So there's that one element there. And the other part of it is when somebody goes out and they come and they blame something, this propaganda methodology of using dead children to justify one's agenda.
Okay, yes. Well, that's true. Well, that's what people do. And that's why we can't look at the motivation of an individual, why they're saying no. That's why I can't go down there. We just have to – we can put facts forward, but most people don't look at the facts. They work on an emotional level anyway. And it's always because it's something that's affected them or something they perceive affected somebody else that they might know. You when you're campaigning about cannabis and – you run into people who are against cannabis and they'll say, no, you'll ask why. It says, oh, well, I know this guy who knew this guy whose sister did this. And you go, okay, do you know their name? Oh, no, I don't. So it's a lot of fable. People have this, what they think is a truth in the back of their mind, which they never use, but it pops up on these occasions, but there's no fact behind it. So I don't know how to change the view of those people. You can show them the facts, but they don't. You look at their eyes, it's sort of like when people – when the Jehovah's Witnesses shows you the Bible, your eyes, you know, just glaze over and you pretend you're reading it. That's what these people do when you show them facts about cannabis as well. Mm.
Well, it's going to take a revolution in the mind, in the consciousness of the country to a large degree. And what's interesting, reading the lesson of history, most major revolutions have usually only involved between 3% and 5% of the population.
Hmm.
Right, and I think that's interesting, because 5% is the threshold for MMP in New Zealand. Like, that causes a landslide, a landmark change, or of some varying description, apparently.
Yeah, no, just getting back on the track just a bit. I think that what we should be doing is be sending people over to Colorado and reporting back to how that state is doing. I mean, we can sit here and go, oh, yeah, no, it's going to be good. We know it's going to be good, but people think, oh, no, it won't. The clouds are going to fall out of the sky and the mountains are going to fall over and all the babies are going to die if we legalize cannabis. But there's states, there's countries that have done it, and we, as a nation, because we're looking at having a referendum in 2020, that we should be looking at these states now and allowing the people of New Zealand to see how well the states are going that have legalized and regulated cannabis. And that's it. And getting back to driving, for years, the New Zealand police have said no to saliva tests. And I take my hat off to them for that, because that's a good stance, because what they'll do is they'll pull somebody over who's driving erratically. First thing they'll do is give them a breathalyzer. If the breathalyzer comes back negative, they'll make that a visual assessment. Is this guy have a handicap, or is there something causing him to weave over the road? If not, then they say, okay, maybe he's impaired. So they'll take him out of the car, or take the person out of the car, and do a roadside impairment test. If you're impaired on cannabis, you are not going to pass it. But the thing is, if you're, say, a regular user, and you're not over the OTT stoned, you're going to pass that impairment test because you're not impaired. So that's the thing. So, but we're getting a push now. I think there's even a private members bill being put in for selection. I don't know if it's been selected yet or not, that they want to bring in saliva tests for cannabis in New Zealand. It's a private members bill. And the thing is that it ruins people's lives, as far as I can tell, because if you're a person who's, say, medicating with cannabis, you take it on a daily basis to get you through your pains and ails of the day. Part of that, your day is driving to and from work because you're going to be a productive member of the community. And then suddenly police pull you over because they're just doing a random drug alcohol test. It's just an RBT truck. And you don't drink. You would never drink while you drive. And you do the saliva test. They say, I'm sorry, it's positive. It's over 5, was it milligrams or multi-billion minus milligrams? I don't know what the measurement is. It's just, you know, tiny, tiny amount. And there you lose your license. You're treated like you're a drunk driver. You'll lose your license and you have a driving infringement on your license. But for a person who's maybe driven for decades, stoned, and never ever had a moving violation, that is an unfair thing to do. That's targeting people. That's targeting people for fines and just to ruin their lives. I'm totally against that. So I take my hat off to the New Zealand police who stick with the belief that a roadside impairment test is the best way to test if a person is too impaired to drive.
Yeah. Well, and also if you do get pulled off by the cops and things like that, you know, be respectful. They don't like it when you get aggressive with them, that kind of thing. Because ultimately you are dealing with a situation, as I found out, you know, you have no power in that situation. Like they can do they can do anything to you, right? Yes. You are basically their plaything at that moment. That's the kind of fear I feel.
It's the only person in society that can tell you, stay there, don't move, and you have to.
Yeah. I mean, you don't technically have to, you know, they're not forcing you to do that, but they will force you if you don't comply. All right. Yeah. And that's the thing. When you have no option to defend yourself because somebody made an arbitrary rule over here that doesn't mean anything, that nets a whole lot of revenue for all these saliva test manufacturers or extra hours on the road for police when they could be out doing what they'd call solving real crimes, that whole shtick.
It's an industry. No, you're right. It's an industry. Look at Judith Collins when she was bringing in drug testing in the workplace. She was asked by a reporter, had she actually spoke to experts about it? She said, yes, she had. And she had. She spoke to one person. He was a representative to a drug testing kit from America. That's who she spoke to. That's where she got her advice from.
It is a foolish and naive move.
It's an industry.
To assume that almost everything that the government has its fingers in isn't an industry, right? But basically everything's an industry in today's society, is it not?
Yeah.
You know? Yes. And we need to roll that back, essentially. A lot of the times people say we need this legislation, we need that legislation. But as Stephen has quite rightly pointed out on this podcast before, you don't. You just need to remove legislation or remove certain things from it. For example, removing cannabis from the Misuse of Drugs Act.
Yep. And I believe if they regulate cannabis in New Zealand, MNP would finally work.
Well, especially if they elected the legalized cannabis party.
What I meant by that, Vinny, was the fact that instead of, you know, ending your day getting off your head by getting drunk, you're sitting back and relaxing, pondering the day and having a smoke, that when a time came for the election time came and people sort of stood, then I think New Zealanders would put a bit more effort into going, hey, no, that's not what we want. We would like this. We'd like to see our politicians do this. We'd like to see our politicians run the country this way, caring about us, because I think we are important. You know, you're just wasting yourself when you're drinking alcohol, and because it's like an abuse in a way. But at least if you're ending your day with a smoke of cannabis, you're more relaxed, you're more, you know, appreciative of yourself and the people around you. Yeah.
That's right. And as my old saying goes, some people just shouldn't drink alcohol.
And no, that's true.
And there are some people who shouldn't smoke weed.
And that is true too.
But fortunately, I'm neither of those people.
No. And you also find that people who shouldn't smoke cannabis because they have an adverse reaction, after the one or two times they don't, they stop. But I know a few people who, once they're drunk, turn into these total monsters that I don't even recognize. They don't even know who I am, and they don't even know they're doing it, and they go through their life doing that. They don't learn the lesson. They become that.
Well, it's said that one of the old occult lore things is that one of the substances that you need to ingest in order to get demon possession is spirits, and that's why it's called that. And you suddenly think about that from a psychological, from a chemical, and from a mythological fashion, and you go, suddenly that makes sense. These people basically turn into possessed bodies, and they're not themselves anymore. And that's kind of like the way that we can understand a lot of the things in society. It's not just such a cut and dry. There are meanings behind why people act the way that they do. And unfortunately, it's not something that we can just write off and say, I'm better than that person, I can control it and they can't, because there are reasons why they can't control it.
And that is the one reason why you should never take spirits, alcohol, and drive, because you're not that person, and you don't have that control. Where it's the opposite with cannabis, all studies into driving under the influence of cannabis, they all say the same thing, and that is that the patient or the subject tends to slower their speed level to be able to deal with their level of impairment. So if they think they're too stoned, they'll drive slower to be more careful.
This has actually been – I saw an article posted on one of my friend's things that's talked about the level of driver distraction or lowering of concentration or something like that above cell phones and talking on the cell phone, even hands-free kits – distract your attention far more than even driving while high, and alcohol far worse than driving while high at the same time. However, while driving high, they noticed it was a very, very minimal amount of effect. And I postulated exactly what you just said, that the reason why you see that impairment but you don't get reflected accidents with results of that impairment is because people naturally see things moving faster than they already are, and they slow down to compensate for it. And the vast majority of accidents, serious accidents that result in death, the causal factor is speed.
Yep. And if anyone's stone's going to actually hit something, they'd be lucky if they're doing more than five kilometers an hour. It's normally like, you know, misjudging a distance as reversing or something like that.
Yeah. But, as Bill Hicks said, you hit something at 4 miles an hour, and that's because you forgot to open the garage door, dude.
I'd never heard that before, but that's funny. Yeah. So this whole... people have to get away from the fear of it because people have a total understanding of what it's like to be drunk, because everyone's basically been drunk sometime in their life, if it's even only been once. They then try and transfer that onto cannabis and think, well, you know, alcohol causes all this carnage on the road, so cannabis appears to, so it has to be the same. Yep.
1,000 deaths per year, you know, on average. That's massive versus this thing hasn't killed anybody ever.
Yeah. So it's the case. I think it's our job, our ALCP's job, and other organizations out there to talk to their friends, talk to their families in an intelligent and
respectful.
Not a mad way. A respectful way, yes. Yeah. And say, look, New Zealand has a high level of cannabis use now. If they regulate it, that level's not really going to rise, because people who are smoking pot, who want to smoke pot, are smoking pot. You might get a wee bit more interest in it, but not that much. So, and New Zealand might be going to hell in a handbasket, but it's not cannabis that's sending it there. We have to remember that, you know. It's so easy to say, oh, yeah, no, the sky's going to open up and the world's going to drown in 40 days of rain if we legalize cannabis. It's not going to happen. We're going to get a better society, I think. We're going to get a more compassionate and a more humane society if we had the balls to regulate cannabis.
I've always found it the irony of the religious angle of resisting cannabis law reform when the anointing oil, the holy anointing oil allegedly given to Jesus, was cannabis oil, when the very first Gutenberg printed Bible was on hemp paper, and in the Bible it says all of these green herbs and everything you can see are for you to use and prosper with.
Yeah, good paraphrasing, but yep, that's basically what it says. And I've had talks with religious people like Jehovah's Witness people that come to the house, and I always like to talk about medicinal cannabis, and I always bring up the fact with the anointing oils and whatnot with Jesus. And normally what you see them doing is grabbing their Bible and going, trying to find something that they can use to show that cannabis is so bad. If it was, I mean, is cannabis worse than eating pork? Because in the Bible it says you shouldn't eat pork, but so where does it come in the level of badness? You know,
I think it's right down the bottom there, next to having a glass of water when you're thirsty. You know,
I think that's it.
I just think about the terrible punishment that await us in the seven realms of Dante's hell because we had a joint.
Yep. And the Bible, they forgot to write it down in there somewhere, but it was going to say if you smoke pot, you're going to hell. I mean, it's just ridiculous. We have to wake up. We're in the 21st century. We're an enlightened, advanced species on this planet. We have a plant which can feed us, which can cure us, which can give us pleasure. It can give us shelter. It can give us many things, and we ignore it. We do worse than ignore it. We criminalize it.
Well, you mentioned a couple of things there. And I recall the hierarchy of human needs, food, water, shelter, love. And sunshine, you know, these kind of things. And cannabis essentially provides so much of the hierarchy of human needs that the vast majority of other products would be, well, let's just say some people in this world don't like competition. And I feel that this is part of the many reasons. It's a multifaceted why cannabis is illegal, who, what, when, where, why, how.
What came first to pick on it?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I believe it was Ian Wishart who talked about the concept of a conspiracy theory in his book, What a Conspiracy Theory Is. And he says that what's happening nowadays with a lot of things, it's actually convergence theory. Much like a shark feeding frenzy, each and every shark has its own agenda, but they just happen to share the same target. You.
Well, that's why we stand up. Vinny, that's why we stand up every day and openly say, there's nothing wrong with cannabis. I use cannabis. It does no harm to me. It does not harm my relationships with my friends, my interaction with the community, anything. And leave it alone.
Yep. No harm, no foul.
And allow me to, allow me to have access to affordable cannabis from the outlets and the people I choose to access it from.
Now, on a final note here, we've gone past the driving issue, and it's the broader governance issues that people are talking about at the moment. The Hikoi for a Poison Nation is walking around, going to dock stations and things like that, and they're calling them terrorists because they're dropping 1080, and I happen to personally agree and support them. And it seems to me that there's a lot of really interesting big issues out there, and cannabis is one of them, probably the most central point of how to solve a lot of issues in society is really, really going to be utilized by this plant. However, it doesn't negate the fact that as public figures or whoever people are, they kind of have an obligation to look into what's going wrong sort of everywhere and really make up their minds about it, because this world is a very complicated place and there are a lot of people who don't... They don't just give it to you straight in an easy way to understand, and it can make things a lot more complex so that you think, oh, it's too hard. But a lot of times it's not really that hard, but you do have to do a little bit of work in order to understand what's going on in this country with regards to many different issues that you see in the paper, who only tell you one side and maybe give 12 seconds, 30 seconds, a few words for the activist they're doing the story on to express themselves.
And it's heavily edited as well.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't always come out the way what you see it on TV.
This is true. Yeah. Stephen Wilkinson, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you,
Vinny.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
And I would, of course, like to remind people that the ALCP, like any political party, does need funding. Now, these massive corporations that do not want cannabis illegal are not going to, like, come hand over. Oh, you want to destroy our businesses with your policy? Oh, here, take my money now.
And tell me, yes, how's it work? And we lose how much percentage of our profit? Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, sure, we'll give you a donation.
I mean, I'll come to the fundraiser. I'll buy a $25,000 table. It just doesn't happen that way, folks. How a party like this gets funded is by you. You, right now, looking in your wallet and saying, I've got a spare $5. Maybe I could give these guys $5 a month. Maybe I can give them $5 a year. Maybe I could send them a $100 donation right now and just say, that's me just for now, but I've got that $100 right now. Doing every little bit you can, when all of us work together, you can accomplish pretty much anything. Just remember, folks, if you're ever feeling down because there's really nasty people out there, remember this one important statistic. 96% of the population are not psychopaths without a conscience.
And visit our Facebook page, The Cannabis Party, and like our page. Make it grow, just like a good plant. Make our page grow. Share it with your friends. Because if you're going to learn anything about cannabis that you need to know, you can find it there. And if it's not there, ask us a question, because we'll find the answer for you if we can. Because we're here for you. Yep.
That's right. alcp.org.nz. Visit the support page, ladies and gentlemen, where you can make a PayPal donation or directly into the Kiwi Bank account of the party, and it is money well spent. We've got a whole bunch of new T-shirts. We've got many different packages and things like that that are in the works that we're going to be bringing out in the fullness of time leading up to the 2020 election. Thank you so much for joining us. Leave a comment in the description below, and give us a like if you can, and share this video around to share the truth and the power and the majesty of marijuana.
See you later, guys.
Bye-bye, everybody.